Thank you so much for joining us on Connecting the Diocese, a product of the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin. My name is Jack Socha, your weekly host for these one-hour shows that cover all kinds of different topics. I don't know whether you can hear it, but in this extremely windy time we have going on right now with the changing weather patterns, I feel like I'm recording in an ancient castle with the winds howling outside. I'm getting ready to do a little bit more soundproofing, but in the meantime, we're just going to have to suffer through it. It'd be great for a good Halloween broadcast, but gee whiz, it's almost spring. Speaking of good things going on, I'm going to be talking with two ladies from the FSPA, and you're going to learn more things about the life of a religious sister than you can possibly imagine, so much that you probably have no idea about. It's a lot of fun, too. So we're going to get to them right after this on Connecting the Diocese. I want to spend just a minute to talk to you about adopting a pet. I've been reading that some animal shelters in our area and elsewhere have been getting a few extra dollars in order to expand their facility because they are really not overrun with animals, but they've got a lot of doggies and lots of kitties that need homes. Bringing an animal, a cat or dog, into what will then be its so-called forever home is an act of kindness, and it also pays back a lot of dividends. Having interaction with a pet can reduce stress, can lower your blood pressure. If you have a dog which needs to go out for a walk and you have to take him out, well, that's good exercise as well. Now, we all know that dogs become fanatically devoted to the person in their house that they love the most, and they also guard the house and do all kinds of things. But also, some people think that cats are aloof, they keep to themselves, they don't show affection. Nothing could be further from the truth. Example A, I got right here because he just crawled into my lap. Wacky, Mr. Wack. He is a black cat, often difficult to adopt because for some people they have kind of weird feelings about them. He's the biggest cuddle muffin you have ever seen. I mean, well, here, listen to this. Yeah, that's this cat saying, I could be anywhere in this house I want. I could be on the most comfortable bed in the world here in this house, but I'm on your lap and I'm liking you. How can you resist a dog that just comes up to you and rolls over on its back to have his belly rubbed? I mean, these are things that are just a wonderful part of life. But as the saying goes, don't shop, adopt. These animals are waiting for you in shelters. They have been checked out medically. They, in most cases, have been spayed or neutered, and they're ready for their forever homes. So think about that. Get a cat, maybe even a black one like Mr. Wack here. So go ahead, adopt a pet and make both of you very happy. Well, as promised, we have two wonderful women from the FSPA here, and let me start with you. First name was Sue?
Thank you, Jack. I am Sue Ernster, and I currently serve in the role as president of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. So I am the head leader of the of our congregation.
That's got to be a lot of work.
And much joy.
One of these weeks, we should just have a chat about all of the stuff that the FSPA does. Because every once in a while, you know, you'll suddenly read something where you've donated $1 million to something that is life-changing. And it's kind of like, oh, I didn't know they, wow, ho, my goodness. Because I think people don't know the breadth and the depth of all the things the sisters do. A lot of our medical facilities in this area all stem from you. I mean, it's really quite remarkable. It really is. And again, you know, people sometimes, especially if they're not involved in Catholic things, it just goes outside their radar. And it is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. It really is. Sister Sarah.
Yeah, I'm Sister Sarah Hennessy. I am a spiritual director, which is a professional, compassionate listener at the Franciscan Spirituality Center, which is at St. Rose Convent. Before that, I was one of our adoration coordinators and did a lot of things with our adoration ministry in particular.
And if I remember correctly, and if not, no one will hear this because I'll have erased it. Did you start out in the Quaker tradition?
I did. Yep. I started as a Quaker and then became a Catholic after many years of wrestling with God, but the love of Eucharist really pulled me in.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking more. What a good tie-in to what we're talking about. FSPA in La Crosse is an integral part of what the Catholic bishops of the U.S. have been putting together. We're in the middle of a three-year adventure right now. Eucharistic revival. And most people would sit around and go, what? maybe I'm going to ask our theological expert over here. Sarah, how would you define a Eucharistic revival?
Yeah, a Eucharistic revival. You know, I'm actually going to refer to what Bishop Barron said when he was talking about it. He said that the Eucharistic revival is about the good, the true, and the beautiful. Isn't that lovely? And the good is the social and implications of our Eucharistic faith, the justice work, the service. The Eucharist transforms us and calls us out into the world. And then the true is really understanding real presence, because so many in the world, including Catholics, don't even understand what our faith is teaching about what Eucharist really is. And then the beautiful is participating in the liturgical and really the devotional practices such as adoration and such as what is going to happen when the procession pilgrimage comes to La Crosse.
Now, what were the three words again?
The good, the true, and the beautiful.
And we need a monster helping, a supersize of good, true, and beautiful these days.
Don't we?
We do need it so much. I just, every week we have people on talking about various aspects of the faith and the actions that occur because of it. And I keep thinking, these people who are walking around, you know, I was make the joke about the people who always have to comment on some online anonymous thing about, well, if you believe of the fairy men in the sky, well, all of you fairy manners, you're missing out on something. You should really stop for just a second. And we're not going to twist your arm, but listen to what is going on here. There's a hollowness going on right now that is it's sad. It really is. It's just sad. And this revival, we have all this stuff going on in the Diocese of La Crosse. People have been hearing about this. Last week, I did a whole overview of it, including some music from the people who are going to be singing and Chris Stefanik. And we had an interview with Immaculata on that she did with one of our other folks from the diocese. And it was not what I expected. It was really amazing. She was talking about, you've got to give up on hate. You've got to stop hating. And it was very nice. And she's going to be speaking there too. And, you know, a survivor of the Rwandan genocide, which is just, the whole thing is amazing. Yeah. But I sat back listening.
Another thing that, you know, when we do our spiritual direction training program, we always say, if you don't want to be changed, don't come to this program, you know? And I think you could say that about the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to be transformed and have your life really touched by the presence of God, then don't participate in the Eucharist. Don't come to adoration. And another thing that that I really like that Bishop Barron says is, be careful when approaching the Eucharist. If they were just symbols, they would pose no threat. But because they are the power and presence of God, they will change who consumes them. They will change who consumes them. You better be prepared to live an eternal life.
I will tell you a story which probably will not make it on the air because I have told it before. But true thing, and I'll just give you an idea. 1987, Pope John Paul II came to San Antonio, Texas for a big outdoor mass. I was working at the biggest radio station in Texas, the morning news host for this 50,000-watt clear channel monster station. We were the only microphone allowed up there. My boss, who was a former Catholic missionary, was scared to death. But I was assigned to go out there. Now, I was not Catholic at the time. I had never been to a mass. I didn't know anything about Catholicism. Nothing. Nothing at all. So I had no expectations. Right? Everybody else was, you know, I mean, it would be kind of like, oh, I can't wait to see Elvis. You know, I mean, it was like everybody, I didn't care. I was out there in the hot sun and the sand with a backpack and a little transmitter thing going. You know, we're out here with the crowd. They're spraying water on them right now to cool them down. And over here, you know. So Pope Mobile goes by. And I look over, and all of a sudden, I was physically, literally hit with a wave. And I felt great. Yeah. I felt, and you know, I have enough experience in my past education with religions of the world. You know, I said, no, this is Holy Spirit just whipped right by me. And if I had expected it, or anticipated it, or even cared, I would have gone, oh, I'm just, yeah. No, this thing, and I felt just totally refreshed. Yeah. And I said, oh man, that's something else.
Isn't it amazing? It's
I mean, this is visceral stuff.
It is.
This is visceral.
It's tangible.
And so what the bishop is saying is, if you're going to look into this, this isn't just words. That's really good.
That's right. Yeah. You know, in my own story, you know, I was a Quaker. I was in college. I was, you know, Catholicism was the farthest thing from my mind. And I went on a pilgrimage in Mexico, and there were two FSPA sisters who were leading it, Sister Cecilia Corcoran and Sister Marie Desjarlais. And after knowing me for 3 days, one of them turned to me and said, do you think God has a call on your life? And I said, no way. I have no idea what you're talking about. And I am, you know, but a fire started in my heart, and it started this 7-year process. And then after I became Catholic and was looking at becoming a sister, I didn't think I was going to become an FSPA. I looked at 10 different orders. I had said yes to a missionary order, and I was starting the application process with them when they said, we think you need to go back to La Crosse.
Yeah.
So I went back to La Crosse, and I was in adoration in our chapel, and I suddenly knew that I was home.
This stuff is real. You know, there was a, roughly 20 years ago, I was doing a lot of journalistic stuff and writing and all that, and it all collapsed after 9/11. I mean, everything went bye-bye. And I took a quick job training people to do basically customer service stuff in La Crosse so they could do phone service. That lasted about a year and a half. Then that contract was ended. So I'm back home and talking to my wife about, let's see, we got to do something here. I got to either write something or get something going. Phone rings on April Fool's Day. Hi, I'm so-and-so from Relevant Radio. We're a new Catholic network. Here you've got radio experience, and would you be interested in running a Catholic radio station in La Crosse? Of course I said yes, and I'll make an appointment with him, you know. Hung up the phone, and I turned to my wife, and I said, if you don't think God isn't looking out for us. And this has transformed all the way through. Doing working at the radio station, and then doing the various public relations things, and continuing even now into basically retirement time for many people, doing this. You know, I'm sorry, this is something, this doesn't happen by accident. And so those of you listening, if you come to this Eucharistic revival, come with open eyes and open heart. But and as you were saying, and as Bishop Barron was saying, you might be surprised. Might be real surprise. What exactly will you folks be doing now in the process of what's going on here?
Yeah, a variety of things. So at the La Crosse Center on Friday, we will be participating in the procession, and we will have a booth. And we hope that you come and stop by and talk to the sisters. And then also the next day on Saturday, you want to talk about that, Sue?
Yes, thank you. We are hosting the pilgrims that are coming, that are on the pilgrimage, for liturgy at our mother house in the morning. And then they're also going to hear a bit about Sister Thea Bowman, who's on the process, the canonization process, as well as then participating in our Franciscan hospitality and coming to lunch with us. And we are thrilled that we were chosen as one of the sites to be able to share who we are and really embrace all aspects by welcoming the pilgrims and then sharing our history of who we are.
And as you mentioned earlier, 175 years. We'll get into Sister Thea Bowman in just a bit, but are there still tours to the public available at the Maria Angelorum Chapel?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. You can call to make an appointment. They're usually in the morning or the afternoon, And you go to our website, you can also see the address for the coordinator. And yes, there are tours available.
It is gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful.
And you can take a virtual tour as well. If you cannot be here in person in La Crosse, you can take on our website, which is www.fspa.org, and there is a virtual tour.
Yeah. There are so many stories that I remember about this. Back in, 1923, I think it was, there was a fire.
Yes.
And the fire was racing down the hall, you know, because they didn't have fire suppression stuff or anything like that back then. And the fire stopped at the point where there's a statue of Saint Michael with his sword.
Yes, and we closed the fire doors. There's doors that have been there, and they closed, and adoration continued.
Oh, my goodness.
While the fire
was burning. That's amazing. Now, perpetual adoration is something that has been part of the Catholic faith since probably catacombs, I suspect. Are you still doing perpetual adoration?
So we do adoration from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., mm-hmm. and the night hours are held in our heart. So it's
okay.
Not something that we do sure. in front of the monstrance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we had started perpetual adoration in 1878 and has continued since then. So, and have you ever heard the story of the promise of how adoration and the chapel...
No. And please, fill me in.
I think we can tag team this one.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
It started in Jefferson in 1865. Mother Antonia had been wanting and desiring adoration and had been talking with the parish priest and Sarah.
And he said no. And then one day he came to the door of the convent and knocked on the door and he said, "Where's Mother Antonia? I have to speak to Mother Antonia." And the portress said, "You know, she's sick in bed." And he said, "I've got to talk to her." And he went in there and he said, "Where were you at 11 o'clock last night?" And she said, "I was in bed." And he said,
"You came to me in a dream about adoration. Quit bothering me. I will allow you to have adoration." And so this was right before the Feast of Joseph, because they had been praying in Novena to St. Joseph. So on the Feast of St. Joseph, the priest came and allowed the beginning of, allowed adoration to happen. And so Mother Antonia made the promise that we would build a chapel when our means would allow for adoration, and that promise was fulfilled 13 years later on August 1st, 1878, when we started adoration with two sisters praying nonstop, praying 24 hours a day.
And what was beautiful, when she made that promise, they realized they didn't have a candle for the tabernacle, and one of the novices knew how to make a candle out of paper and lard. You know, can you imagine lard light candle? So Mother Antonia placed the lard light candle on the chapel and made the promise. And so now every St. Joseph's Day, we make a lard light. And for example, when I made final vows, I made a lard light. And it's a symbol of how in simple things, you know, you give what we have to God and God does what God will.
That's this idea of the humble origins. You know, not everybody could afford a candle.
And they realized, we've been so excited that we have this opportunity and we don't have what we need. And so they used what they had. And also part of the promise was, you know, we'll build a chapel if God were to bless us. And so our adoration is really part of our thank you for the blessings bestowed on us.
The Maria Angelorum Chapel, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, physically is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can just sit in there and you can just sense the sense of time. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine all of these sisters praying. And, you know, again, there are certain places you can go. Yes, you can go to Yosemite and look at, you know, the geysers or whatever. But this is more than just a physical monument or something like that. You walk in there and you are feeling, as Brother Lawrence used to say, the practice of the presence of God.
Yes, yeah. There's a, and many have mentioned this when we walk into the Adoration Chapel, which is behind Maria Angelorum, where the Adoration takes place. There is a different sense than the rest of the building. There's a different energy that flows through there, and it very much calms people down. And I remember when I first came to community, we would go and have our assigned times of praying, and initially, I was thinking, oh, this is so long, even half hour. And as we continued and continued the practice, now that is the fastest hour of the week. And it is the time where I can focus on being present and listening to God, giving God my needs, my desires, my hurts, and being refurbished and renewed to go out being the loving presence.
Yeah, and besides the sisters, we have over 100 prayer partners that are people from the community that take an hour and come and pray. And you talk to them, and many of them will say, it is my favorite hour of the week. And it's partly because you are in the real presence of Jesus Christ in exposition, so that my heart is exposed to Christ and Christ is exposed to me. And there's a real vulnerability that happens there. And I was leading a tour once of high school students. And this one boy, he came in and he came in to the church and he said, I got to get me back to church. And then we came into the Adoration Chapel and he immediately like took his hat off, you know, took his comb out of his hair and kneeled on the kneelers there. And I was done with the tour. I was moving out and he was not going anywhere. He was just staying right there. So one of the teachers stayed with him. And then the teacher told me later that he was actually going to court that day for a drug offense and that he just needed that time with Jesus.
Maybe the beginning of a complete turnaround in his life. You know, we talk about this. This is a theme that runs through the show. I mean, every once in a while we have a cooking show or a movie show or something like that. It isn't like we always, but there's a theme that goes on that as my wife was saying to me, and she's really very smart, she says, you know, this wasn't some accident that just happened to keep going for 2,000 years. I mean, there were all kinds of competition for messiahs and miraculous whatevers. And I always say, you know, having been a disc jockey for a few years, you look at these pop groups. I won't age myself by saying the Beatles, but, you know, even New Kids on the Block are probably 20 years old now. But anyway, they could spend millions of dollars promoting their acts and their shows. And there's several of them that are currently in the news, you know, all the time now. 10 years later, huh? Who? No, I don't want their CD. I don't know. No, you know, they're gone. Millions of dollars spent, promotions, you know, all kinds of gone. And you know, remember that bit of writing about, you know, one single man. You know, 2,000 years ago, in the least expecting circumstances, and we've just finished a few weeks ago, much of the world celebrating, and of course, back in December, again, much of the world celebrate. This doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen that way. It just doesn't. And you can see people who had no interest in these things, but if they just crack the door open and take a peek, you know, maybe something simple, you know? I was looking through some, now it's all in the public domain, there's a whole bunch of writings of saints from years ago, and there was one, and I'll think of the name of it the minute I leave. But it was like a six-day reading. And I was talking to the bishop about it, and he said, "Yeah, you read that; it'll change your life." Yeah, I'll think of who it was in just a minute. Ignatius of Loyola.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, okay. And he has this little program, which is pretty short.
I think it's the spiritual exercises.
Yeah. Thank you very much, sisters. you make me sound like I thought I knew what I was talking about. But and Bishop says to me, you go through that and it will change your life. And this is free on the public domain. You can look it up. It's just everywhere. I mean, there's PDFs of it floating around everywhere. There's stuff like this all over the place. And there's stuff of it right here in La Crosse. You know, if you have a computer, there's stuff right in front of your keyboard you can go find. And if you go to the diocesan website, for example, go to your website, for example, there are pointers to all these things. And all you got to do is look at them. You know, there's no admission fee. There's no saying, well, unless you're worthy of looking at this, don't come look at it. It's kind of more like if you're unworthy, then come look at it. And then, it's fascinating.
If you're wondering and seeking, I think, and maybe even if we're not seeking, God will be present and some way will tap us on the shoulder and make God's presence known.
Frankly, I don't care what these online commenters say. They're all seeking. They may not realize what they're seeking or how they're seeking, but they're trying to fill a void that they have walked away from or just never been exposed to. And we see this incredible troubles with illicit drugs and you know, hallucinogenic gummies and all this stuff. People are just trying to come up with something to make them feel better. And it's getting to be very, very concerning, you know, that, and adults too, all kinds of people. And we're offering just some things for you to look at. Our bishops were so concerned about this that they have organized this massive national thing saying, look at what we've got here. You know, we're not just doing this to have a spectacle. I mean, we're doing this because we really sincerely think you need some help. And we think we have the answer, which, of course, is what the event is going to be called. This is very, very exciting time to be seeing it happen. There's going to be adventures going on as the monstrance that carries this Eucharist is transferred from one bishop to another. And it's I can't even imagine what this is going to feel like at this point. Yeah. It's very exciting. Can we talk a little bit about Thea Bowman?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. This diocese has several individuals who are blessed or up or servants of God. Father Joseph Walieski has been covered many, many times and will be again here. But Thea Bowman, where was she from originally?
She was from Mississippi, actually Yazoo City in Mississippi. And she was raised as a Methodist, and she had our sisters at Holy Child Jesus School as we were all at, as religious orders were asked to go and teach in the schools. And so she had our sisters in Holy Child Jesus and said, that's what I want to do. And she had to almost convince her parents.
She was an only child, so you can imagine that. And her father was a doctor, and her mother was a teacher. And they were really pillars of the African-American community in Canton. She was originally born Bertha. When she was 15, she told her parents she wanted to join the FSPA. And I just cannot imagine. I grew up in North Carolina. And it was enough of a shock for me to come to Wisconsin that I can't imagine what it was like for Thea to come up here. And she was given the name Mary Thea in honor of the Blessed Mother and her father, whose name was Theon.
And what year was this? Did this happen?
Yeah, so she was born in 1937.
And she came in the late 50s because she professed her final vows in 1963.
Mm-hmm. There was still a great deal of prejudice at that time against persons of color. If I remember correctly, that the only reason she was allowed to travel essentially first class in the train was because she was with white sisters. Otherwise, persons of color were pushed back towards the baggage compartment, which just shows you how recently that was still going on. Yeah. And so, but she was allowed the honor of to sit like a normal person.
Yeah. Yeah, she was just, both Sister Sue and I came to community after she passed away in 1990 from cancer, but she was just a force. And when I go to African American parishes anywhere in the United States, they'll recognize the medal and they'll say, oh, you're with Sister Thea. And Sister Thea is just such a force in the community. And if you're interested in really hearing her voice, she was a singer, she was a professor, she was a preacher without, you know, just from her soul. And if you go and listen to the speech that she gave to the bishops, have you heard about this speech?
No, and I need to find out where these are now, because yeah. Now I got something to listen to. This is great.
I think this was in the late 80s.
Yeah, it was in 1989 at Seton Hall in New Jersey to the U.S. bishops, and she blew them away. And one of the things that she said is, you know, are you prepared to take me fully functioning? I come as a Black Catholic fully functioning to my church. And she got the bishops to stand up and to hold hands. She said, now get a little closer. Get a little closer.
Yeah,
you're too far
apart.
Yeah, because
they were crossing hands.
And so she got them, and she had all these bishops singing, We Shall Overcome.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think that might have been her first miracle.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, and I can imagine our Bishop Callahan in 2024 doing this with joy.
She came to the Midwest, and she said, I'm going to make, because people asked her, why don't you join a congregation of Black sisters here in the South? And she said, I want to be an FSPA, and I'm going to help them to like me.
Ah, yeah. And again, I should probably correct myself. When she came up here in the 50s,
yeah.
It was not like today.
No,
but
you are correct.
By a long shot. Yeah, but
and she was only African American sister in the congregation.
Yeah, and the things to overcome, the prejudging, the prejudice, would be immense back then. Heck, it could be immense even today. But that's got to be crazy. And so, because of her, what part did she have to do with the FSPA? Expanding and building and doing all the projects that you guys do. Where did she fit into that?
Yeah, you know, she spoke all over the country, and she was very active. If you go into an African American parish today and you take out their songbook, the preface is by Sister Thea. And many of the songs are by Sister Thea. She also, at St. Xavier in Louisiana, she taught priests how to preach is one of the things that she did. So she just did many, many things. And she had a very short lifetime. It was cut short by cancer. And during those last years, she continued to preach in a wheelchair and go wherever she was. And the influence that she's had has just continued to bloom. I remember when I was in Texas, an African American Catholic came up to me and she said, "You've got to pray to Sister Thea." She, you know, because I was discerning religious life, and she said, "Sister Thea will pray you right in." You know, so there was that. She's really alive in the people's hearts.
Yeah, that's that remarkable stuff. I will have to find some of her singing.
Yes.
There must be. I'm either probably, you know, YouTube or something. No doubt someone has put
her
it up there.
Singing yes. Is amazing. There is a documentary
that was just shown recently at the Rivoli on Thea because of her history and the relevance of how she lived for today. I mean, her relevance then is still so relevant today in the aspect of how do we fully live into who God has created us to be? Thea knew who she was. She believed that. She lived it. And her energy and belief in that allowed others to come fully into who they are. And when you asked the question, Jack, about how do we get into the different ministries we're in and or the different involvements, that's who we are as FSPAs. We are meeting the needs of the times, and the needs continue to have, you know, going to the margins. And sometimes the margins look differently. So our areas of emphasis may shift. We've always had education as an area of focus. While we may not have as many sisters physically teaching, we still have education no matter where we are. And how do we educate others to believing who they are? And so our different ministries are meeting the needs of the times. How are we living the gospel and allowing others to experience God's love? So that is how we are involved in our different ministries.
And I think that's directly related to adoration. Pope Francis said, the thing with adoration is when Christ becomes your center, you stopped being the center of your own life. And when Christ becomes the center of your life, you automatically go to the margins. That's what happens. That's the transformation. And I think that's what Bishop Barron was talking about, the good of adoration and of the Eucharist, is that when you realize that Christ is the center, there's something that just automatically happens, that you go and be with those who are most hungering for the Lord.
This is basically a footnote or a side note. When you go to the La Crosse Center and you go to the FSPA booth, do not expect to see women in black habits going, I wish it wasn't so hot. We have sisters and who are traditional habits, and that's fine. That's their tradition. That's what they want to do. That's great. We have plenty of room for that. The FSPA has always believed in dressing for where you have to be, and that makes perfect sense. And so you might say, well, can you show me where the FSPA people are? And you're going to show them your medallion.
Yes.
And by the way, can you tell, and yeah, can you describe what's on that medallion?
Yeah, so it is a monstrance, which comes from the Latin word to show, and it has the Eucharist in the center, and then there is a wreath for eternal life, and it is a Maltese cross, which has 8 points for the Beatitudes, and on the back
is Queen of Mary, Queen of Heaven, Queen of the Angels,
which is the name of our chapel.
Sure.
So I always feel like when I'm wearing my medal, I'm in the chapel, I'm in adoration. And when you talk about habits, I was in a parish once, and there was about a 3-4-year-old boy, and he said, Sister, where's your habit? And I got down right on the ground, and I looked him in the eye, and I said, you know what? Every day, I put on my invisible habit of the love of God.
Oh, that's good.
And he went, ooh, like a superpower, you know?
Well, and it is.
It is. You know, every day we wear our habit, which is our love of God and our consecration to Christ.
Right. And it sounds like Sister Thea was, as they used to say, was very comfortable in her skin.
Yes, and she grew into that more fully as she lived her life and really was able to claim her identity as an African. And that openness to claiming who she was allowed others to claim who they were and whose they were in being a child of God. And when we are in adoration of the Blessed Sacrament exposed, it is that relationship with God that takes us out to be the hands and feet to those who need.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned that you each have a ring as well.
Yes.
But the most obvious thing will be the medallion.
And you know what is on the ring?
No.
IHS.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Okay. Which stands for Jesus.
Right.
So
right.
It's that connection to right. Jesus. And I've heard stories of, you know, someone meeting a sister at the airport and like not knowing, okay, I haven't met this sister and she's arriving in town, and then just noticing the medal and the ring and being like, oh, there she is.
We know who you are.
And even though we aren't wearing like distinctive clothing that's separate from what others would be like the clothing of the day, there's still a way of identifying, because honestly, when I've walked through airports, I can identify and say, oh, there goes a religious, there goes a religious. There's something about the essence, and I believe it's the fully living into God, who God has called us to, that allows that radiation to happen. And it happens in every lifestyle.
Yeah, I think you're correct about that. There are things that are palpable, but you got to kind of quiet down to feel them. Mm-hmm. You know? But I'm also kind of not a fanatic by any means, but a fan of all of the wonderful Catholic symbolism. Like your medallion is filled mm-hmm. with symbolism. You go to the cathedral, and I tell people, look around at what is all around you. It is amazing. I love, you know, during the Chrism Mass, you know, when they take the candle and they put it in the holy water. And this is like incredibly rich symbolism that just is enlivening to see it happen. And there's constant, in every Mass, Chris Carstens has a book that he's written about understanding the Mass. And it is filled with, look for this, look for that. When the priest does this, this is what it means, kind of things. And it enriches what's going on. I used to make the joke, and having come from not being a Catholic, that if you walk into a Catholic church and go to Mass and just sit quietly because you really don't know what's going on, it's like two people looking at a football game, you know, the Green Bay Packers. One has never seen, they're from Tibet, right? They've never seen a football game. It makes no sense to them whatsoever. A bunch of guys running around, this, that, and the other. And, you know, they go on, and then, but the guy who's the fan understands that, you know, this quarterback is on injured reserve, and therefore the other guy's doing this, and he always goes to the left, and da-da-da-da, you know. It was that joke about the person who went to the football game, and there was the coin toss, and they were tackling each other and stuff, and he's, why doesn't he just give him the quarterback? You know, but it's the same thing with the Mass. The more you spend time at the Mass, and even if you are not yet a confirmed Catholic, if you just get into the idea of when they kneel, you kneel, and suddenly it'll feel good. And when they stand, you stand.
Yes, Jack, when you're speaking of, when you say about the Mass, I think of the different rituals. Mm-hmm. And I know I have experienced the deepness of how the ritual has touched me very strongly at different times, or the sacramentals of, let's say, the... when you talked about the vigil Mass with the, you know, the ritual of putting the candle into the water and all of that, each of those can taps into our senses, so that it isn't just a mind thing. It's a full body experience, and receiving Eucharist is a full body experience because we're taking that in, and it is becoming part of us then.
Yeah. And because we are part of a tradition and a faith that is 2,000 years old and has thought through and lived through all these different things, I always feel like when you touch one part of the faith, it's like touching a spider web, because everything is interconnected. Everything makes sense and is integral. The catechism is a gorgeous, you know, piece of... stunning writing, and so is the documents of Vatican II, and so many different pieces that just really come to life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that St. Ignatius thing, I really, frankly, have not fully gotten into it by any means yet, but it could have been written yesterday.
Yes.
You know, this man, this saint's thoughts about approaching God are identical.
Yeah. The same thing with St. Francis and St. Clair. And, you know, when I traveled to Assisi, what really struck me is that it's not about getting back to St. Francis. It's not about connecting with St. Thea, as she will hopefully become. But it's like getting to the experience of the divine that they experienced. And through that, that's how we connect.
Yeah. And, you know, when you spoke of Ignatius of Loyola and Sarah spoke of going to Assisi, you know, part of the heart of the Franciscan charism is, and you spoke to this earlier, all is connected. That it, for Franciscans, there is no separation. Creation is so integral to how we experience God. So everything is connected. All is good.
Million years ago, when I was studying all these different religions, when we got to talking about the different forms of yoga, and there are several, they're not just hatha yoga, the way you see in the stores, but they talked about how there's people who have different psychologies of how they approach religion. There are people who have to be very active, the kind of people who go to Habitat for Humanity. There are people who are very intellectual, they want to read all these great saints. There are those who love the ceremonies, and there's others as well. But the idea is that no one person is just one of those. They're a mixture of all of them. And if you go to the Catholic Church and you watch what's going on and you see what's going on, there's something to satisfy every single person who has those kinds of needs.
We are a one big tent, and there are so many options under the tent, and it's all centered in the Eucharist. The Eucharist is what is holding us together and sends us forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to mention something about the Eucharist. Can I do that?
Absolutely.
Jack, that I wanted to say is sometimes people get really confused about how can real presence be real? And it's the intensity of the love of Jesus, the power of God that lets Jesus, his real body, blood, soul, and divinity be present in the Eucharist. Unlike other sacraments where the power is there, it's actually the power and the actual presence of Christ that is there. And there's this theory by, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but it's Sokolowski.
Sounds good to me.
Yes. And he talks about there's three main ways of looking at the world that are happening one right now. And one is Darwinian, which is that matter is all there is. The other one is kind of Aristotelian, that spirit and matter exist side by side. The third one is biblical, where the precedence of spirit over matter. And if you come to the Eucharist with a Darwinian sense, it's not going to make any sense at all, because all you see is matter. And if you come with Aristotelian, it will make more sense. You'll see that there's both spirit and matter there. But when you really come with this biblical sense that God can use material for his present without ceasing to be God, then it clicks. Does that make any
yes,
sense
it,
to
yeah.
you?
We are always aware of the fact that most of what we think about is, what's the word, anthropomorphic. We have to look at it in the terms of what we are. You know, and I'm again reminded of stuff from my school years ago. This stuff pops in my head about the three dolls that go to the ocean. One is made of carved rock, one is made of rags, one is made of carved salt. Well, the rock one goes into the ocean and comes back out and is unaffected by it. Mm-hmm. The rag doll goes in and is permeated by the salt water. Mm-hmm. The other doll goes in and dissolves into it completely. Mm-hmm. Now, that's an Eastern thinking thing. It doesn't necessarily jibe 100% with Catholicism, but there's a lot of people like that, that they can actually see this stuff, they'll be the rock. You know? Other ones will be, you know, really touched by it. Mm-hmm. But there's other people who say, you know, there's something more going on here than just being touched by it or seeing it. And that is an experiential thing that when God decides to help you out, I guess he will, or she will, or whatever you want to call it, God. That's the anthropomorphic again. But the more you spend time with this, I have been very, very appreciative of being here for 10 years. Just talk to good people who are involved in these things. Because this isn't just some craziness you unpack on Christmas and Easter. You know, and what these bishops are trying to do dramatically this time and symbolically with the handing over of the monster, it's all this stuff fits together. They're just saying, would you please, what's the old song, Taste and See?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. We're not asking you to fall on your sword for us.
Yeah.
We're asking you maybe to fall on your knees. But look, just come and look. If you come to this thing on the 7th, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're a believer or not, look at what these people are doing. There may be some aspect of it that you just go, wow, that just hit my hot button.
The experience. It's an experience to be had. The experience of walking as part of the pilgrimage. The experience can change, can transform. And being Eucharist and receiving Eucharist can also transform us when we allow God and others to work with us.
As St. Augustine said, be what you see, receive what you are.
If you told me in 1987, when I was a radio reporter in San Antonio and had just kind of gotten hit by a wave from the Pope and found a little tiny golden cross, that if I was to go back to 87 and say, Jack, someday that little cross is going to be framed in a studio where you're recording stuff for a Catholic network, I would have said, you're out of your mind. You know, you don't know how these things work. You don't know how these things work. But it's very important that you spend a little time. We have this event coming up, and it really is very much open to the public. There is a small charge for it. But the FSPA is open. People can come tour the FSPA. If you got somebody out there, and I've talked about this a lot, especially we talk about the priests and religious, you know, they have this tug that's just embedded in them. But maybe they're not that. They're just a person listening right now. What's the first step they should do? If they're listening in the greater La Crosse area, or they're in Omaha, or wherever they happen to be, what should they do first? Who should they see?
Yeah. Yeah, great question, because there's so many things you could do, you know, but I think one thing that you could do is go to your local church. Go to your local church and adoration. We always think about exposition in the monstrance, but you're in adoration anytime you're in the presence of the tabernacle. So when you go into a church, you're in adoration. That is it. And just experience Eucharist, experience adoration. Websites and YouTube videos are a great place to explore. There's some wonderful sites.
I would go to your local diocese website.
Yes.
And then go to links that they offer you.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of screwball stuff out there that does nothing to do with the church. And also, have a sincere chat with your local priest. You know, if they have time and they're receptive, and I'm sure they will be, they'll talk to you. They like that. That's kind of part of what they do. Or one of your local religious, if you're lucky enough to have one in your area. But and of course, if you're in the greater La Crosse area, aside from coming to the cathedral, you have to call up the FSPA and say, when are you open for a tour? Go look at the bookstore. Go do a bunch of things. Go look at everything. Go talk to these folks. So they'll be around, you know. And we're just going to have to find that talk that Thea Bowman gave and have to get. I'm pretty sure that wouldn't be copyrighted. I have to be careful what I put on the air because some people own the rights to stuff. But I suspect the Thea Bowman stuff I can probably get away with.
And we have an archives full of Thea Bowman information. Things and information. And,
all right, I'll have to talk to you about getting something on. That'd be fun. Yeah. It'd just
because
be nice to
I
do
have
it.
Seen the clip, the news, the clip of the bishops. It's on YouTube, and I believe there's like the Mike Wallace when she was interviewed
for
60 Minutes. That's also on YouTube.
I have to be having just finished the script for my audiobook on podcasting. There is something called the copyright. It's a group, and it is amazing what. Especially nonprofits and some religious organizations do not know about copyrights, about how what you can't do because you think you can, but you can't.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna I have to go and check these things out. I do not want to get the diocese, the network, in trouble.
No. And I'm not sure what if there is a copyright on that specifically.
The Mike Wallace thing, I'd be worried about. That would be. But anything that she gave, if she was giving it to the assembled bishops, you know, at Seton Hall, I don't think that would be a problem. But
actually,
I would check
the USCCB website.
Yeah, I can do that too.
That,
if it's got a link there, that would probably be pretty good. Mm-hmm. Copyright Alliance is a very interesting website. If you have any, it's amazing what people, they have like 10 myths about copyrights.
Okay.
Well, I'm nonprofit. I can use it, can't I? No. I'm a religious group. Can I use it? No. Can I play 10 seconds of it? No.
No, it's about honoring the artists.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. If I just mentioned this is not for commercial use, no. It's a great deal of fun. You know, we have managed to burn up a lot of time here already.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, what is your website?
FSPA.org.
That's a tough one. FSPA.org.
As in Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. Mm-hmm. And another thing you can do on our website, we have a prayer request button. You hit that, say who you'd like us to pray for. It'll go straight into our adoration chapel, and our sisters and prayer partners will pray for them.
Right, and we will guarantee you, this is not just getting thrown in the box and forgotten.
No.
Now, this is, we, and meaning you guys and also the diocese, take this very, very seriously.
Yes, we believe in the power of prayer, and power in the best sense of that prayer. It's the energy and the thoughtfulness that somebody else is thinking about me and wishing me well in the prayers is putting the positive energy into the world, and that can only make things.
And it changes our hearts.
Yes. We're the ones changed by prayer.
Where it changes our hearts.
So if you are in some situation or you know someone who does, go to FSPA or DIOLEC.org or both and put in a prayer request.
Absolutely.
What a wonderful way to end a conversation with two lovely ladies who are devoting their lives to God and to service to others. It's really kind of neat. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Jack. Just wonderful.
There's that old saying about the more things change, the more things stay the same. I've never quite figured that one out. How about the more things stay the same, the more things change? I don't really know. But anyway, in the Diocese of La Crosse, there are some things going on that are significant changes, not the least of which, of course, is we're getting a brand new bishop. But in addition to the TV mass and, of course, the magazine, we are expanding ways of going out and showing you what is going on here. And most of it involves connections via the internet, and in many cases videos, as well, of course, as this show, which is heard not only on the radio, but also is heard as a podcast. You can go to iTunes, you can go to Amazon, you can go to Spotify, or you can go to the diocese website and just go to Connecting the Diocese and click on the file and it'll play, or you can download it for later use. We're also getting ready for unique coverage of the so-called Eucharistic Revival and, of course, the special event, The Answer, coming up in a month or two. There's going to be a dramatic moment when the two bishops meet basically on the Cass Street Bridge and exchange the monstrance from one diocese to another. Now, of course, they already have a still photographer ready to take the shots, but also, they told me, they're going to have one of these video drones above the scene looking down. Now, a few years ago, this would have been either impossible or unimaginably expensive, but technology has actually gotten cheaper and better. The equipment that I use today costs a fraction of what it cost even 10 years ago. So we're not spending money like there's no tomorrow. As a matter of fact, we're very frugal and good stewards of your donations and your collection plate money as well. But I will say this. Next time there is an annual appeal message going out, I do hope you respond, because we are trying to give you the best possible experience we can with the least amount of money we can, and we always need your help, and we thank you. There's plenty more information at our website, DIOLC.org, DIOLC.org. Jack Socia here, reminding you again that these shows are archived at diolc.org/connecting if you wish to hear them again or download them. Also, they're available where most podcasts are available, places like Amazon, Spotify, iTunes. But again, if you don't have to register or anything like that, you can just go to diolc.org and you can just click on it to hear it or click on it to download it. They're an MP3 audio file, and I believe the last 100 shows are there, the newest one, of course, at the top. No ID, no password, no email required. Just go up there and listen or get one. We are just flat out of time. I will catch you next week right here on Connecting the Diocese.